there's a hell below, we all gonna go. If there is a hell below, we all gonna go. Saints and sinners, repenting at the ending. It was written before the beginning. I never get tired of winning. Grab a pen and get to scribbling. Promises we never printed. If there is a hell below, we all gonna go. If there is a hell below, we all gonna go. If there is a hell below, we all gonna go. If there is a hell below, we all gonna go. Your nervous system, there is an escape and it's what you're wishing. Dragon full of fire and you're just a victim. Burning everything like we in the kitchen. Creeping like a virus to your nervous system. There is an escape and it's what you're wishing. Dragon full of fire and you're just a victim. Burning everything like we in the kitchen. Yeah! Flame that!
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi Miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle?
I'm just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't say less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Boy, you act on my ex, got a lot to address. How am I pretending Resi when I'm booked on the red? How am I pretending and blood quantums in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla till let me show you what that is.
Jew relatives in Dinaway, Maganiduk, Gete, Bikwe, Indigenikas, Minowa, Bogonogi, Jekwaba, Makwe, Indigo, Makwa, Ndurem, Ogakaning, Wayne, Jabayan, Gakabikong, and Danungum. Bonjour, everyone. Welcome to Medicine Bundle. It is July 4th. 4th of July. It's nearing the Independence Day for my nation, the Red Lake Nation. So there is lots to celebrate around this time. We're just finishing up with the Pride Month. I was going to say the Two-Spirit Power. But it's been I'm back in the studio, and I do apologize for being out for a while. I had such a busy June month, so I do appreciate you tuning in for those reruns. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and I'm just thankful to be here. I just had a number of events happen in June, including the Two Spirit Powwow, which I was co-hosting with Trish Cook, and that was amazing. That was fun. It was a Tuesday, so we had over 900 people show up to the powwow on a Tuesday night, indoors in the summertime. So it was a really, really, really good celebration. There was some coverage on NPR about it, and there's some coverage also in other media outlets as well. And I was just really happy to be there. And I think one of the milestones for myself was having my 5-year-old there, because typically in the past, you know, I've always had like childcare set up for her. So it was always such a huge thing for me to be able to show up for community events. But this time I brought her with, because she's getting older and I thought she could kind of stay close to me and stay busy. And she had such a good time. So I'm so glad that I brought her. She was dancing. She registered as a dancer. She didn't have like regalia, but she had a ribbon skirt and she went out there to dance. So one of my next tasks, in addition to several other tasks, is to throw some jingles on a dress for her, because I have a number of different various color jingles, and I'm going to create a jingle dress, and I've never done that before. I want to give a shout out to Tommy from the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara Nation. Well, it's I'm not exactly sure which nation she belongs to, but it's now they formed like a confederacy, so they're MHA. That's where she's from. So shout out to her for sending me those jingles. And she's always, you know, done business with us, and she's ordered a bunch of Indian clocks from my dad. So thank you, Tommy, for the business. And as a Native entrepreneur myself, I've done Native, you know, I'm Native and I do entrepreneurial stuff. I'm not like, you know, I'm building my business up. It's really important to have those connections and to have people who will do business with you. She has her own store on the reservation, so she purchased a bunch of clocks for my dad. And my dad has like these Flava Flav clocks, and they have Native designs on them. So if anyone's purchased the clock from my dad, I just want to give you a shout out. He is the owner and operator of Standing Cloud Graphics. And it's really cool because the way he like launched his artistic business. I mean, he's always been an artist, and he used to do lots of art back in the day before I was, you know, even thought of. But there's a photo of him at the Indian Center in the art department, and he's just listening intently to one of the elders there. And so my daughter, my oldest, when she was about 15 years old, it was funny because I had left on a work trip, and I gave her, I think I left her like $100 or something. It was when she was 15, so she's 26 now. So it was over 10 years ago. So $100 would have got you through a weekend. But I left her like $100. I'm not sure if I left her alone. I think she was very responsible, so she was fine. I think my grandma, wait, I'm not sure. My memory is so wild, but what she did with the $100 was like bought art supplies. And I came back from the trip, and she had painted these beautiful images of very cultural Anishinaabe imagery, bright, beautiful, bold colors, right? And I'm like, okay, so you just turned into like an epic Anishinaabe artist over the weekend, or, you know, whatever, 2-3 days during the week. And then ever since then, she was just an artist, and she has always been an artist, and she started doing like art business things, and she attended the Oscar Howe American Indians Artistic Summer Institute at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, and it's been amazing, an amazing journey with that. But my, you know, when she launched that, my dad got inspiration from her, and he went ahead and started doing his art too. So it was really cool. And, you know, today, 2025, they do, you know, like collaborate on booths at events, or, you know, they support one another. And it's really cool to see that. And I'm just very proud of the both of them. So shout out to them. Shout out to Tommy. I'm just back out here. So I just had a busy month. And just this past weekend, actually, my oldest daughter, who I just got done talking about, was married. So she married her partner, and it was such a beautiful gathering. And one of my friends, Tasha, just happened to be able to have the rights to see to their marriage. And it was her first wedding, and it was so awesome. She wore a ribbon skirt, and it was just so heartfelt and authentic. And, you know, like the traditional weddings that I've seen growing up, whether it be on TV, I've also, you know, witnessed my mom marry her husband too. And it was very traditional, you know, it was like in a church, and there was a priest, and, you know, like the traditional throwing rice and the garter belts and throwing of the bouquet. And that was always stuck in my mind. So seeing how, you know, couples can come into union and just in their own authentic way was really beautiful. So she got married, and it was awesome. And I there's just so many people I'm thankful for. Shout out to Deanna Bolio, who's been on my show with me, for hooking me up with something to wear, because I just didn't have time. I didn't have time to find something to wear, and she hooked me up, and it was like the theme was red. I didn't know this, but the theme, the idea was to have everybody kind of show up looking like the Homies characters. You know, if anybody remembers those guys, like the cholos, like the little like you'd go find them at like vending machines for like 50 cents, and you'd like crank the thing, and then they'd come out a little pop, and they'd be cute little homies, right? So if you guys remember the Homies dolls, the figurines, I learned that we were supposed to dress like that afterwards. And I honestly, I don't know if I would have been able to pull that off anyway, but I did see one of my daughter-in-law's family member dressed like super, like 50s, like very, I'm not sure what the style is called, but it was very Homies. And I thought that was so cute, such a cute idea. But it was red. There was a red theme all the way through. So shout out to Brianna Green and her new wife, Zitlali Montez, and their union. And thank you to Tasha for seeing that their marriage was official and rubber stamping and bringing your authentic true self to the celebration, and everyone who showed up. My cousin traveled from Lower Sioux with all her babies. She just has a new baby, and baby's teething and she showed up. And I just really appreciate that. Chrissy Graves, shout out. I hope you're listening. Thank you so much for coming to the party, because knowing me, like, having all those kids, I would have used that as a perfect excuse to not show up. So, man, hats off to you guys for doing that. Hats off. Roaches off. I don't know if the, no, plumes off. I don't know what I'm saying, but I don't know what the indigenous equivalent of hats off would be, but thank you, Miigwech, for showing up to my daughter's celebration. She got married. I'm so excited. And you know what? When she was younger, I kept telling her, I was like, you're going to get married before me. You're going to be married before me. And sure enough, she's married. But I'm so happy for them. And so congratulations, Bree and Lala, for your marriage. Newlyweds in the house on Pride weekend, no less. What a month to just celebrate. So happy belated Pride month to you all. It is now midsummer, and there are so many of our relatives and in the woodlands and the plains areas, the tribal nations in our region, you know, where this is the time where we harvest, we're outside, we're at ceremonies, Madewin, Sundance, those ceremonies, you know, we're out at sweat, we're active. So if you kind of think about how the weather behaves, that's kind of how, you know, we follow suit traditionally. And in our DNA, we follow suit with how the seasons behave. So if you, you know, if you think of fall, it's a time of like reflection and kind of letting go. And that's how our, like, the seasons in our life, our lives work as well. And I feel like I'm approaching fall myself. And I feel like it's a time for reflection and it's a time for letting go. So, and if you think of winter, you know, winter is a time where we hunker down. We, you know, do a lot of warm activities. We tell stories, tell the creation stories. We start talking about those Atizukanug and naming them. So that's, if you think of elderhood or Gitche Ayawag, that's that time of winter. So with that, I just wanted to share a little bit about summer. So summer for in Anishinaabe culture is a busy time. And if like the philosophy in, you know, from the little that I know about our culture, it's we're moving. We're always moving. And I'm learning that even our minds, you know, we have to keep our minds fresh. We have to keep our minds moving. We can't stay stuck on one thought or one idea too long. We have to keep it moving. And that's the flow of energy. And that's how our language works. And that's how we move through the season in up and outward. Like, so in the summertime, which is, we call Nibin. Summer is Nibin. We do a lot of harvesting. There is a lot of plant life that is abundant for us to pick. I know berries, I'm not sure what berry, like raspberries would probably be available right around now. It's past, I believe, past strawberry season, but but berry picking and picking medicines. And I've been always very inclined to learn about medicine, plant medicines. I think it's something in my DNA a little bit, because I'm so inclined. I don't know too much, but like whenever anyone starts talking about plant medicine or, you know, learning about it, I pipe up and I listen up. And I want to learn more. I want to learn more, even in my mind, my mind at this time. But there's so much to learn, and I will be learning until I'm done here. I'll always be learning. I might be even learning when I'm in the spirit world. So I'm gonna not stop learning, learning about the plants. And that's one of the things that when you're in ceremony, you learn about is the plants. You'll be assigned certain plants, and they'll make mention of them to you, and you will. It's up to you to establish a relationship with a plant. And for like the Western mind, it sounds. I mean, to have a relationship with a plant, what does that mean? But I remember my elder Ida at one point years ago, you know, she gave me a couple of plant names, and she told me to sit with them, look for them, learn about them, harvest them, use them, because it takes a long time. Like just identifying a plant is kind of like the first step, or, you know, very early on in a process with the relationship that you can build. But I will say that I do have a pretty sturdy relationship with the red willow plant, which is, I don't harvest it in the summertime. I harvest it in the wintertime. And I was actually just at the community center last weekend where I learned about red willow. And a 9-year-old boy taught me how to harvest a red willow. But I'm pretty confident that I have a decent relationship with red willow, because I know what it's used for. I know how to identify it. I know when to harvest it. I know how to harvest it. I know, like, on the plant, like, where to cut and where not to cut, and things like that, and like what to do with it afterwards. So that's just an example of a plant relationship. And that's so the red willow is actually something that I use a lot in the summertime, but I don't process it in the summertime, because the plant itself in the summertime, I think it's brown, but it has leaves on it. And when it has leaves on it, that's not the time that you harvest. So it's used, so you peel the red part off, the red bark, and then you scrape the inner, like, light green bark. I don't know if it's called necessarily bark, but inside. And you scrape it, and the shavings can be added to a kinnikinick or used as traditional tobacco. And I know folks are like, tobacco, like that's a translation that we can use in English that describes it. But it's not like the tobacco plant, like a traditional tobacco leaf, you know, is like from down south, or like big, huge leaves, and then they're dried and like what they use in like cigarettes and cigars and things. It's added chemicals and things like that. That's, you know, that's what's used there. But this is more of a traditional tobacco. So it's used in everyday life. I try to use it every single day, to offer just tobacco to the spirit world. I offer my tobacco and, you know, give thanks to the spirit world because I was told the spirits really, really enjoy it. So, and I was also told that we're the only ones that they can get tobacco from. So they kind of sit and wait around for it. And so when we offer tobacco, it's like a kind of like a doorway or like a bridge or like a portal from our realm to the spirit realm. So when we offer tobacco, it's like a, it gives them life from us. So it's like a reciprocal relationship. So that's Red Willow. But in the summertime, there's certain things that will be done. We are told not to share certain stories during the summertime, just in, you know, outside of ceremonies or, you know, different procedures and protocols in certain ceremonies, we're not able to share certain stories. So when we, in the summertime, like if we're sitting around a fire or, you know, hanging out at the camp or preparing to go ricing or picking berries, we tell Dabaja Mowinan and Dabaja Mowinan. And those are just like good stories, like just everyday stories, family stories are just stories that you can make up. Maybe even, I don't know, I make up stories when I tell at night. But so I wanted to share a little bit of that. So Niben, yeah. But before I share, I actually have a little bit of information to a clip on YouTube that I wanted to share too about Anishinaabe culture. And then I have a book in front of me, and it was published by the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. And it's called Dabaja Mowinan. So I'm going to read a story from that, and then I'm going to share a clip from YouTube, and then we're going to celebrate the summer. But before that, I'm just going to take a quick break. And after the break, we'll dive right into more of the summer cultural Anishinaabe celebratory stories. All right, you are listening to KFAI and Fresh Air Community Radio. This is Medicine Bundle, and I'm your hostess, Deanna Standing Cloud. We'll be right back.
Support for KFAI comes from the Dakota, presenting Sarah Morris, Monday, July 14th.
Minneapolis's very own Sarah Morris has evoked favorable comparisons to Tori Amos and Norah Jones with her singing and songwriting talents. American songwriter calls her latest release, Here's to You, a set of songs that relay an intimacy and allure shared in equal proportions.
More information for Sarah Morris can be found at the Dakota at dakotacooks.com.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Marina Krut on Tuesday, July 15th. Marina Krut performs her songs with the bandura, a Ukrainian instrument that combines elements of the lute and the zither, which she plays in unique ways to add depth and dimension to the instrument. In addition to performing on the front lines of the Ukrainian conflict, Marina travels abroad to perform and express her appreciation for the support of her country. Opening the show is the harmony-focused ensemble Red Thread. More information about Marina Krut with Red Thread, available at thecedar.org.
Bonjour, you are listening to Medicine Bundle. This is your hostess, Deanna Standing Cloud, and I am back. And we are talking about summer, all things summer. It is July 4th and 2025, and we're just celebrating summer. It's midsummer. Yeah. So, one of the very, very powerful beings that we have in Anishinaabe culture, and as well as Dakota culture and Lakota culture and many other tribal nations across Turtle Island, are the Thunderbirds, the Thunder Beings. So Thunder Beings are powerful. So in our, and these are real. These are real spirits. These are real forces of nature. So above and below, we have these very powerful spirits. So the yin and yang, if you will. So thunder beings are above, and then the water beings are below. And there are stories that go along with both of them. And especially in the summertime, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, not even 2 weeks ago, you know, Bemidji was hit pretty hard with a very powerful storm. And I think a tornado touched down, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of damage. And the city of Bemidji is recovering from that currently. Many businesses were affected, families. There was a scramble to get people power and food and water and things like that. So, but that just goes to show the impact that thunder beings can have, and how us as human beings are, you know, should be respectful of them. So those thunder beings were the ones who brought that power. And, you know, our human brains, you know, we see the damage, and we see, you know, we think about the things that we have to respond to as far as, like, you know, insurance claims on our cars or things like that, which is, you know, total bummer. But it just goes to show how powerful nature is, and how powerful our earth, and how powerful and alive these beings are on our planet. So I just wanted to share. So this story, and it's bilingual. It's in also Anishinaabe. There's a little bit of Anishinaabe sprinkled in here, but I'm going to go ahead and read. So this one is entitled The Thunderbirds by Nibagabo, David Abid Nibagabo. Okay. The Thunderbirds. I have been given tobacco by Neo Gijik, and I was over there, and I can't remember all of her name. Anongukwe, I always say to her. When you guys give me tobacco, I carefully accept your tobacco. I will tell a little bit about what I was taught when I was small. What I knew when my body was small, when my knowledge was small, when my thoughts were really, really small. When I was about 7 years old, I remember a little bit. Well, it was like when I knew I was alive. And I was over there with my grandmother and my grandfather. Those are the ones I lived with. My older brother joined us soon after. Mashkowub was his name. We lived together with them. My grandfather was called Zeza, and he was also called Ojig Anung, and we called him Dedenun. Well, after all, he was our father. He took care of us. He raised us, that old man. And the one he married, my grandmother, Equaze, was that old lady's name. Over there they lived. We arrived there and we called her Gwame, Dedenun, and Gwame, we lived with them when we stayed there, when we arrived. When we first arrived over there, what is called Minisinakwang. Now, that little Indian community is called East Lake in English. And when we first arrived there, we did not know the Ojibwe language. We only spoke English when we arrived over there. I arrived there first, maybe 2 months over there. I was there before my brother came. And I just now know a little something. And outside, we always played. Me and my brother, Mashkowab, unknown somewhere over there out in the woods. We always played. We did all kinds of things there in the brush over there where we were, many trees over there. When Graham started shouting and hollering, we heard her when she was hollering for us. And our name in the Anishinaabe language, that's what she used when she called us, that old lady. When she was calling us her grandchildren, Mashkowab, Nibagabo. She really hollered out to us, and somewhere wandering out in the bush, we heard her. That's when we took off toward her. We came running, arriving there when the old lady was out there. And that's where she built a fire outside. Then the old lady told us to take that tobacco. She said, take this tobacco. Well, we took that tobacco. She said, right there, put that tobacco in the fire. So our tobacco was put in the fire. Me and my brother threw our tobacco in the fire. And this is what that old lady also says. Your names, and you should always say, here is my tobacco. That's what I said. What I did, here's my tobacco. Niba gabo. And that's what I said. And then that old lady began to speak. Carefully, she sent them those thunderbirds. Her words. We did not know anything. Now, after the old lady was done talking, now we took off running. In a little while, we hear them. Me and Mushkawub. Me and my older brother. We hear those thunderbirds. Now they have arrived. After a bit of time, we were out and about, and suddenly we know there very soon they will arrive. The hot breath of those thunderbirds, and it will start raining, so we run inside. That's it. That's all I wanted to tell about today. Thank you for listening. And if you guys had thoughts about, like, how things were worded, it was told in Ojibwe first and then translated into English. So when it's told in Ojibwe, it's translated into English the best possible, and it doesn't always sound how English speakers would formulate a sentence. So if you were thinking about that, and when people sometimes I get, you know, get questions, and I'm not an expert in Ojibwe, but sometimes people will say, how do you say this in Ojibwe, or like something, and I can't even think of an example, like, but it's crazy, because like some things, it's not cut and dry. It's not like, or how do you say, I don't know. I forgot what an example is, but it doesn't necessarily translate perfectly the way people want, like a Western mind, the way that the Western English speaking mind works. It doesn't translate like that. There's always like further questions that people have after. So like, how do you say, let's go somewhere, my little brother, or something like that? And it's like, or I don't know, not, I don't know if that, but you always have to ask like the relationship, where this person is, maybe who else is around, and more information. And sometimes it doesn't even translate the way it should, the way you think it should, because the Anishinaabe worldview is different. And if you were to kind of talk in English the way Ojibwe sounds and the way it's structured, it sounds a lot like the way Yoda talks. And I think even the rest of the world does that too, linguistically. English is actually super, learning just a little bit I know about Ojibwe, I learned how separated I feel towards people and others and myself when I'm speaking English, or like how powerful English is to create a distance from you in certain things. And it's hard to explain but English is divisive, and English creates distance from you. And it really like makes things like solid. If I don't know if that's making sense, but when you think, when the little bit I know about Ojibwe, I'm like, oh my gosh, like Okay, I'll give you an example. So the word for like fear, so I've been thinking about like the two paths. So like in the Seven Fires prophecy, there's a time when Anishinaabe, human people, will have a decision to make. And there's two different paths before them. So you can choose the path of connection, nature, earth, love, and then you can choose technology, destruction, divisiveness. So you have this, you have the choice. So there's two different paths you can take, right? And it's up to each of us to figure out which path we want to take. And it seems so simple, like, of course, I'm going to... But I feel like in every moment we have that choice. And I've been thinking about like the difference between like fear and love and how I feel like in the same moment, like I'll be scared, you know, in my mind. And this is all in my mind. I'll be afraid of something, right? In a moment. And then I'm like, okay, that's not... I tell me, that's not who I am. That's not what I want to be about. So I'll switch it to love and I'll just think about love. And then I'm like, okay, well, in the same moment, what does love look like instead of being afraid? And it's a whole different like experience. And you're in the same location, like the same things are happening. But when you shift your mind to be love, it's like a whole different world. It's so transformative. So I've been thinking about like the Anishinaabe version, the Anishinaabe words for fear and love. And it was so mind-blowing because I'm like, fear, like the way to describe fear is like you're closed off. Like your mind is like closed off. Your heart, maybe even too, is closed off, like tied down. And that's how it feels when you're scared of something. It's like you feel closed off to the rest of the world. And I was like, man, that's true, you know? And there's words that describe that same feeling or that same phenomenon in... Because I think about the words too, like... in like November, December, it the same word part comes together when you're talking about like the lake freezing over, because it comes together, like closes off, right? It, like a event horizon where everything becomes ice, right? And then I was thinking about the word for love, and the word for love means like something's emerging, like zage iduin. Zage is like something's emergent, coming from you. And like the word for like May is like the month of May. Zage Iduin is like spring. So it's emerging, right? Like, so it's just, it was such a huge light switch that turned on for me in my mind about like, so these are the two choices I have in every moment. And it's not just like a cut and dry, okay, I'm gonna take this path and be done with it. It's like you have a choice. Every moment, every interaction, every day, we have a choice to either be afraid or be love. And both of those feel completely different from each other. And it's so crazy because I'm sitting here in a chair, in the same chair, and I think of being afraid and it feels different. I can feel it in my body. I can feel it close in on my heart and my throat. or being love. And I do feel something emerging. Like, I feel it breaking up and, like, dissolving and then feeling outward. Man, I'm just, like, I'm thinking about stuff. So I really, you know, like, go to some of the words that I've learned and what the concepts are behind all of it. And I apply it to, like, every day and how that plays out. And it's just mind-blowing. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, those are just, like, tiny bits of the culture that I know. So if just a little bit of what I know is so profound, like, can you imagine what it would be like to experience the world through an Anishinaabe, or, like, whatever your indigenous language is, through that worldview? Could you imagine your identity, and could you imagine the roots that you would have and the wings that you would have, and how fresh and how new and how beautiful things would look, and how your relationship to other people and how your body would probably heal itself if you had that worldview? It's crazy. It's amazing. And there's probably PhD people, folks who are writing about this. And here I am just blabbing on about it on my show. But there's probably evidence that you could show of this actually being a thing and working, you know? So there it is. But yeah, I wanted to share that. And that was a little bit about the Thunder Beings. So thank you for hanging in with me as I go on and on about my realizations about love and fear. And But I actually have, I found something and I wanted to share it with you. It is about Ojibwe Four Seasons. I think it's a little dated, but it's really cool because it tells about summer, and it highlights a lot of about the culture of our summertime as Anishinaabe. So you are listening to Medicine Bundle, and you're listening to me as well ramble on, and I just appreciate you. And we're going to take a peek and listen to Ojibwe Four Seasons. So KFAI Fresh Air Radio.
This is Gitchigami, or Lake Superior, in the Northern Great Lakes region of Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Canada, where my people live. My people are called the Anishinaabe, or the Ojibwe tribe, but in English we are often called the Chippewa Indians. Have you ever heard of the Chippewa or any other Indian tribes? Today, the Ojibwe people are the second largest tribe in North America, and we continue to live in the Great Lakes region. My people have always hunted and gathered what they need from the land from season to season. Have you ever gathered something from the land? Long ago, my Ojibwe ancestors gathered gifts from the land in the summer season. Nibin, summer. They traveled to their summer village near the birch trees and near the lakes. They went by boats called canoes that they made from the bark of birch trees. They paddled the canoes quickly along the river waterways and carried their possessions with them. The birch bark canoes were light and strong. Have you ever paddled a canoe? This was the summer village. Their round houses, called wigwams, were also made from the bark of birch trees. Summer is the only time of year that the bark comes off easily to make into canoes, houses, baskets, and other things. Have you ever seen a white birch tree? The white outer bark is like the skin of the tree. Before my people, the Ojibwe, peel the bark from the birch trees, they put a small gift down to thank the tree for giving its skin so people could use it. The birch tree was called the Tree of Life by the Ojibwe because of the many gifts this tree gave to the people to use. To peel the bark in the summer, they had to cut along the tree through the outer layer of white bark with a stone knife. Then, they gently peeled the outer layer of white bark from the tree. It slipped off easily as a flat sheet. Underneath was the brown inner bark. Don't worry, the tree wasn't hurt when they carefully peeled only the white outer bark in the summer. The children learned from the adults and helped to peel the bark. They practiced the right way to peel the birch bark so they wouldn't harm the tree. The bark was very beautiful and a useful gift from the birch tree. It was strong, waterproof, and lightweight. It could easily be made into many different things. The Ojibwe made an interesting work of art from the birch bark. A sheet of birch bark was peeled into layers as thin as tissue paper. This thin layer of bark was folded carefully. Then they made bites with their teeth in the folded birch bark, creating a unique design. It tasted a lot like paper. When the bark was unfolded and held in the light, you could see the beautiful design. This was a tradition in the summer. This was done for fun or as a pattern for beadwork. Does the design look anything like a paper snowflake? They also made baskets from the strong sheets of birch bark. Holes were made in the bark for sewing with a sharp stone point. Roots were split to make cord for sewing the birch bark baskets. Girls learned from their mother, aunt, or grandmother how to make birch bark baskets. Everyone had to help in the summer work, even the children. The Ojibwe stored a lot of their food in these baskets. What do you store your food in? Summer was also the time of year they got together for fun because it was easy to travel in this season. My people, the Ojibwe, met other people in the summer and traded any extra birch bark they had for things that they needed. These were some of the traditional activities the Ojibwe practiced in the summer long ago. How do you think my people do things today? How are Ojibwe summer activities today different than long ago? How are they the same? Today we have cars to travel in, and we don't move when the season changes. Ojibwe families today still go into the forest in the summer to peel birch bark. Now, we don't wear clothing made by hand from deer hides like they did long ago. Some things have changed, but we still peel the birch bark in the same way my people did long ago. In the forest, we look for a straight and smooth tree to peel. We still place a small gift and say a little prayer to the birch tree to give thanks for the bark, just like my ancestors did a long time ago. My aunt is teaching my cousin how to peel the birch bark respectfully so he doesn't hurt the tree. First, she cuts a little triangle of the bark to see if it is easy to peel. When it is warm enough in the summer, the bark peels easily. If it peels easily, she makes a long cut in the outer bark with a metal knife. Carefully, they peel the outer layer of white bark around the tree. The inner layer of the bark is brown and smooth like leather. It feels cool and wet. It slides off in a big sheet. My aunt peels only the outer white bark because it will not harm the tree. Children must always go with an experienced adult to peel bark from any tree today. There are fewer birch trees today than long ago. We must be very respectful of the birch trees, only gather what we need, and use all of it. Later, my aunt cuts the bark into the shape of a basket that she wants to make. She splits the roots to use for sewing the basket, like my ancestors did long ago. She puts holes in the bark for sewing with a metal tool called an awl. Have you ever made a basket? It takes a long time to make one. They are very beautiful containers, and they are treasured today by Ojibwe families.
So that was just a little insight on Ojibwe four seasons and the summertime, and it actually got me thinking while I was sitting here. So it's July 4th, and yeah, and as Native people, so I'm Anishinaabe, and we're Midwest, so, you know, we weren't like, you know, the first to, I don't know, like, we're inland, so, but it just got me thinking about the Declaration of Independence, because it's like one of the most highly revered documents of this country, and included in the Declaration of Independence on the foundation of the United States and the independence from to be its own country, in the wording of this historic document talks about Native people, and specifically Thomas Jefferson. He labeled us as Native people, and the label is merciless Indian savages. And I just wanted to make sure people knew that. Like in Indian country, we share that and we know that, and there's t-shirts, you know, with that on there, and just as a talking point, maybe, you know, like, why are you wearing that? What does that mean? But that's how he described Indigenous people. And he did not believe that we should practice our own culture and speak our own language and have our own land. So, you know, that's what he called us. So it's just interesting. And I wanted to make sure that we heard that about this. I found a little something here, I think a couple years ago, just about the phrasing in the Declaration of Independence.
Now, the United States at the outset will not recognize Native peoples as part of the new experiment in nation building. In fact, Thomas Jefferson will familiarize himself with the doctrine of discovery and will write one of the most racist statements enshrined as part of the Declaration of Independence. Merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. So when the United States is created, school children will learn very early in their lives the prejudices of the founding fathers of this nation. Native peoples will not be accorded rights and privileges of citizenship in the 19th century. In the first week of this class, I introduced you to the concepts concerning the racialization process, and I shared with you that racism is an instrument of power used by those in power to perpetuate their power. Thomas Jefferson knew very well what he was doing when he phrased merciless Indian savages into the Declaration. Now, as we follow the logic of prejudice, stereotype, avoidance, to discrimination, making it legal to a disadvantaged population, to segregation, making it legal to an isolated population? Well, what is next? How does a society come to hate? Has